When it comes to the recent announcements of the U.S. withdrawal from Syria, it's hard to discern what this drawdown is all about. On the one hand, the U.S. president announced that it will pull all of its 2,000 or 2,500 U.S. troops out of the country. At the same time, the U.S. National Security Advisor and the U.S. Secretary of State are giving different versions all at the same time. In this edition of the debate, we will look at the U.S. intentions in Syria, in particular the withdrawal announcements and the reactions by U.S. regional allies.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has dismissed as a serious mistake the recent remarks by the U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton in Israel, pledging to ensure Turkish non-aggression against Kurds fighting against Daesh in Syria.
Turkey won't make any concession. We are determined to take our steps against terror organizations such as the PYD or YPG along with Daesh. We will act to neutral those terror organizations in Syria very soon. We cannot accept Bolton's message given from Israel. Bolton made a serious mistake.
He accused the U.S. administration of announcing contradictory remarks and underlined that the YPG and the PKK can never be representatives of the Kurdish people. The Turkish leader also said Ankara had already finished preparations to enter Syria and that Washington was stalling on a commitment to leave the town of Manbij as a first step. Erdogan's comments came just hours after Bolton arrived in Ankara for talks with Turkish officials. Erdogan snubbed Bolton by not meeting with him, leaving the U.S. National Security Advisor to instead hold talks with his Turkish counterpart Ibrahim Kalin and other officials at Ankara's presidency complex.
The latest remarks by John Bolton forces Turkey to persist more on entering northern Syria. In my opinion, his remarks about Turkey include wrong words. The U.S. is trying to create a new concept of terrorism to prevent Turkey from fighting YPG. To this end, the U.S. has to fulfill the gap it is going to leave behind in the region.
The withdrawal of U.S. troops from Syria is expected to be carried out swiftly. However, no accurate timetable has been set yet. The new tension in two sides' relations comes as observers say U.S. President Donald Trump is under huge pressure from inside and outside of the U.S. over his decision to withdraw forces from Syria. Rahshan Saglam, Press TV, Istanbul.
Our guest joining us for this edition of the debate, we have editor at Veterans Today, Mike Harris, who joins us from Phoenix. We have chief editor of AttackTheSystem.com, Keith Preston, who joins us from Richmond. I'd like to welcome you both. Mike Harris, let me first start with you. I'm not too sure if you would know this, but just curious, how long has the U.S. And its troops been in Syria, and why did they go there in the first place?
Well, it's somewhere between 18 and 24 months that the U.S. troops have been in Syria, at least officially acknowledged. Now, the purpose there is under the cover of fighting ISIS. But you have to realize that ISIS is a creation of the CIA, Mossad, and the Saudi intelligence service. And they've been supplied by that with their armaments and the things that they use to wage war. So it really is a very difficult question. And the U.S. really, the official reason is fighting ISIS. The unofficial reason is to thwart the efforts of Iran and of the Russia.
Keith Preston, roughly 2,000 troops. Officially, it's been announced that they have in Syria. It could be as high as 2,500. When the U.S. made this announcement, just logically speaking, how hard do you think it is to withdraw 2,000 or 2,500 troops from Syria? Keith Preston.
Well, it's the actual withdrawal process itself is not that difficult, but the question is whether there's a political will for this. The real issue is the president has made this particular decision. However, he's under a tremendous amount of pressure from both inside the United States and from outside the United States, including from some major American allies, predominantly Israel and Saudi Arabia, The government of Prime Minister Netanyahu in Israel has expressed opposition to this. The government of Saudi Arabia, and as well as some of the other Gulf states, including the United Arab Emirates, are also opposed to the troop withdrawal. And within the United States, both inside his administration and in the Congress, as well as in the media and so forth, there's been a tremendous amount of disapproval expressed of the troop withdrawal as well, to the point that the Defense Secretary, General Mattis, has actually resigned. So the question is, to what degree will the president cave into the pressure to actually keep the troops in Syria for a longer period of time? And we see that his own national security advisor, John Bolton, now is attempting to establish what amounts to a contradictory policy that contradicts what the president has said, because the national security advisor continues to try to extend the timetable for the withdrawal of the troops, saying that it may be a matter of months or maybe even a matter of years. And of course, the real issue there is, as the previous speaker said, the wider geopolitical objectives that are involved. Now, what seems to be happening is that President Trump has made an agreement with President Erdogan of Turkey, where the United States will essentially farm out the war in Syria to the Turks, and therefore that would allow the Americans to pull back. The others in the Trump administration are opposed to this. Now, as was said previously, the official reason for remaining in Syria at this point is to fight Daesh as well as to protect the Kurdish enclaves. However, we see that the real effort is to oppose the influence of Russia in the region, and also to undermine Iran on behalf of the Soviet Union. I mean, on behalf of the Saudi Arabians and on behalf of Israel.
Okay. Well, we're trying to figure out, Mike Harris, the different ways that Trump has made this announcement. Because first announcement that Trump made, he declared that the battle was won against Daesh. He calls them ISIS. And according to this one periodical, refused military entreaties for more time. The second announcement, after a timetable of 4 months was made through the media, it seems, he said, well, he remained committed to the withdrawal, but he told reporters when asked that I never, and I'm quoting, I never said we're doing it that quickly. And then you have his, National Security Advisor Bolton and Michael Pompeo also making different statements regarding this withdrawal. Why is there such a schism when it comes to the announcements and the different figures here around Trump were saying other things other than what he's saying?
Well, it should be quite obvious to even a casual observer that President Trump has got a lot of opposition to his policies within his own cabinet. And I have advocated for a very long time that President Trump clean house at the Department of State. He should also clean house at the CIA, because CIA seems to have an unprecedented influence on the direction that the Department of State takes. Now, Trump was elected and ran on the premise that he's going to end these foreign wars, the time of endless war is over, and he's not going to engage us in any more foreign adventurism. And when he tries to do this, the military industrial complex pushes back. And this is really what's wrong with this country. Now, we're supposed to be a democratic republic, but our foreign policy is being run by unelected bureaucrats with their own agenda. This is not the agenda of the American people. This is not what the American people want. It's not what we voted for, but it's what these people who have their entire career invested in continuous war. The U.S. has been on a bad track since 9/11. That's really when things went off the rails as far as our foreign policy, the war on terror, all of this. This is still... over from that incident. Terrorism is a created incident. This is not organically grown. The supplies, the supply lines going to ISIS, where are they getting their armaments from? Where are they getting their munitions from? I've been to Syria. I've met with various Syrian ministers. I've seen American-made TOW missiles made by Raytheon Corporation in Tucson, Arizona, in the that were captured from ISIS. Where did they get them? Did they get them from the U.S. or one of our trusted allies? The other thing you have to realize is how ISIS funds itself. The oil doesn't pump itself out of the ground. It doesn't transport itself to the refinery. Somebody has to pump it. Somebody has to put it on a truck or a VLCC crude carrying ship and move it. When it gets to the refinery, somebody's buying it. When it goes to the bank, somebody's clearing the account and paying it off. This is organized crime on an international, unprecedented level. And this just tells you how big the problem is. This is much, much more than simple terrorism. This is more like modern pirates who are going in and robbing the Syrian people of their natural resources. And you know, there are bigger political agendas behind this, and there are people and entities out there that are making huge amounts of money off of this, and that's why they want to keep the war going.
Well, that's interesting. Didn't expect that turn, but thank you for that. And Keith Preston, let's elaborate a little bit more on that, because what Mike Harris has said, just a quick Google search while he was talking, led me to ask you this question. When it comes to the number of bases that the U.S. has in the Middle East, it seems like it's spread over 7 countries, and the numbers roughly amount to about 54,000. We could talk about the ones in Jordan, Iraq, Kuwait, Bahrain, Qatar, the UAE, and Oman. Now, what I'm trying to get at here is you have the announcement of the withdrawal from Syria, and within days, you have a scurry of U.S. allies who are so worried about this announcement, almost showing weakness, that it prompted the Michael Pompeo to go to the region, which he is in there now, to reassure allies, is what it was described as. Why are these countries, allied to the U.S., feeling so weak after this U.S. announcement?
Well, there are several different things at play in this situation. The Americans, the Israelis, and the Saudis have a similar foreign policy objective with respect to their own states. So there's something of a convergence of interest here. But the principal objective of the Saudis is to eliminate rivals to their own efforts at expansion in the region. The Saudis expand terrorist activities throughout the Middle Eastern region, and they in particular want to undermine other states that they see as their own rivals. And Syria has been a major rival to Saudi Arabia, and for this reason, Saudi Arabia has funded a lot of jihadi operations within Syria itself. Of course, the rivalry between Saudi Arabia and Iran is well known, and the Syrians and the Iranians are allied at this point, and the Saudis are concerned that if the Americans pull back, that will strengthen the Iranian position by strengthening the Assad government. Another situation that has to be looked at is the role of Israel in all of this. Israel has its own expansionist objective, and Israel also wishes to eliminate rival nations that it sees as in the way of its own expansionist objectives, which has been Syria. Remember that Israel continues to occupy the Golan Heights, which is internationally recognized legally as Syrian territory, and this has been going on for half a century. Also, the Iranians are considered to be Israel's primary rivals in the Middle East at this point, and Israel is opposed to anything that would, in their view, have the effect of strengthening Iran. Now, the United States has an overarching agenda in the sense that the Americans wish to eliminate any regime in the Middle East that they see as in contradiction to American hegemony in the region. What the Americans wish to do is eliminate autonomous, independent nation states in the region that refuse to be incorporated into the what's called the Washington Consensus, which is essentially a system where the Americans hold on to unchallenged economic and military domination of the region. And that's why the Americans have been so adamant about regime change in places like Afghanistan, in Libya, in Iraq. The Americans have worked for regime change in Syria unsuccessfully so far, and the Americans have also called for a regime change in Iran as well, and that's really what is driving Mike Pompeo and John Bolton and other figures in the administration at this point. So that's really the objective that's happening here, is that the goal is for all of these states, the convergence of the Americans, the the Saudi Arabians and the other Gulf monarchies like the UAE, like Qatar, like Bahrain, and also the Israelis, they wish to see ultimately the governments of Iran eliminated, the government of Syria eliminated, and essentially repeat what they've already done in Iraq and what they've done in Libya and what they did in Afghanistan.
Okay.
And there's a range of interest internationally and domestically in the United States that, as Mike Harris said, is absolutely opposed to this. And so the president is under a great deal of pressure to keep the troops in Syria at this point.
Well, this is the deal, Mike Harris. You know, you talked about how ISIS, or Daesh, as we like to call them, perhaps is somewhat related to its creation to CIA, perhaps, or maybe even Israel in terms of it getting support from Israel. Tell us, Mike Harris, why did Trump make the statements that he made just days back when he said Syria is just death and sand? ISIS wants to go to Iran. Let Iran deal with ISIS. ISIS wants to go to Russia. Let Russia, who hates ISIS, deal with it. What are we doing there? We're just fighting ISIS for them. Let them fight them. Isn't that, in a sense, an admission that Russia, and aside from that, more importantly, Iran has also been at the bulwark of fighting Daesh terrorists? And that's an admission by the U.S. with Trump's making that statement?
Yes. And let me give you some background. I've been to Syria several times over the past several years. I was in meetings with Syrian ministers about discussing the topic about inviting Iran into Syria and inviting Russia into Syria. And the consensus was that they had to invite Iran and Russia into Syria in order to defeat the foreign meddling of these outside intelligence agencies, the Saudis, the Israelis, and U.S. involvement here. It's on the record, folks, that John McCain, a senator who recently died from Arizona, he had been photographed in Syria illegally with ISIS commanders. Now, if that, in pledging them support from the USA, now, if that doesn't just shout volumes about the U.S. involvement in this, this was never a civil war in Syria. This was an attempt by foreign countries to infiltrate Syria and depose the Assad regime. That's what it is. There's no ifs, there's no ands, there's no buts about it. And as I stated, the U.S. foreign policy has been hijacked by unelected bureaucrats in the Department of State and the CIA who think they know better and the will of the American people. Now, when Trump calls Syria nothing but death and sand, all you have to do is look at how miserably the U.S. failed in both Afghanistan and Iraq. Both those countries are fractured, they're destroyed, we've lost thousands of men, we have tens of thousands of injured, we're $7 trillion in the red from those efforts. And the American people did not benefit out of this one iota. Remember, President Trump is a Make America Great and America First nationalist. These things do not benefit the American people one iota. The American people would be much better off if that same $7 trillion was spent on domestic infrastructure. We need hospitals, we need schools, we need highways, we need airports. All of these things they don't have enough money for. They're starving the American people to fund their foreign adventures, and they're failing. They have not been successful in any of their endeavors over there. And it's time that we had fresh thinking come into the Department of State and the CIA, change the goals, change the objective to something that's going to benefit the American people, and get off of this endless war thing. The other thing that has to be decoupled here is the direct Israeli influence on American politics. John F. Kennedy, president, had an executive order declaring AIPAC to register as a foreign agent. 3 weeks later, he was killed, and Lyndon Johnson reversed that order. That executive order needs to be reinstated so that Israel cannot buy influence with our politicians. All of them are for sale. Uh-huh. The Israeli policy is, if you don't support Israel, we will oppose you, we'll fund your opponent. This
right.
has to stop. This is foreign influence in the U.S. Government.
Yes, and talk about Israel. One of the things that John Bolton was addressed by Netanyahu on his side there, Keith Preston, was the issue of the Golan Heights. Netanyahu stressing the importance of the world recognizing, as Netanyahu said, Israel's claim to the occupied Golan Heights. Is the U.S. going to cave in? Is Bolton going to be the one pushing Trump in turn to have this recognition. Keith Preston.
Who you ask?
Keith Preston.
Well, the Israelis have sought recognition of their own. Yes, thank you. The Israelis have sought recognition of their own occupation of the Golan Heights for half a century. This is nothing new. And the Israeli occupation of the Golan Heights is recognized internationally as illegal. It's been condemned by the United Nations, as has the occupation of the West Bank and Gaza. The issue, though, is that the Americans and the Israelis are firmly in league with one another. And as was said previously, the Israeli lobby exercises a tremendous amount of influence over the American government, particularly in the realm of the foreign policy apparatus, as well as in the elected branches of government as well. So for this reason, the United States has persistently backed Israel's 50-year-long violation of international law. And John Bolton in particular is particularly zealous when it comes to Israel. He's been described as an Israeli nationalist, even though he's not from Israel. He's from Maryland. But he's very adamant about maintaining the line that Benjamin Netanyahu was taking, as well as far as maintaining the occupation on an indefinite basis. And we'll see Bolton, as well as Mike Pompeo and other officials in the Trump administration that are associated with the neoconservatives, who are very hawkish when it comes to Israel. We'll certainly see them continuing to push this position and trying to block any effort to end any kind of Israeli presence in any of the occupied territories, not just in Golan Heights, but also in the West Bank and in Syria as well, in Gaza as well. And Israel really is the elephant in the room when it comes to this, because Israeli influence over American foreign policy drives many of the decisions that are made in the region.
Right.
And the Saudi influence is also significant. And then, of course, the Americans have their own wider geopolitical agenda. But
right.
Israel really plays a critical role in terms of the constant push for so-called regime change in the area, whether it's Syria, whether it's Iraq, whether it's Libya, any of these places, because these are the regimes that Israel sees as in opposition to its own expansionist objectives. And
that
for this reason, the Americans, and other reasons as well, the Americans have pursued this constant policy of regime change, which every one of these efforts has failed.
Okay.
Every one of these efforts has
failed.
I got to
jump in and give Mike Harris the last 30 seconds,
reason.
Keith Preston. I'm sorry. Mike Harris, time and again, Iran's malign influence in the region is what Michael Bolton, Mike Pompeo, you have Bolton saying it, you have Trump saying, you have practically many of the countries in the region saying that. Do you think that Iran is after imposing its influence in the region, like it's going to eat up the turf of all these countries and rule over it? Is that what you think Iran is after?
Well, no, but that's what we're being sold as the American public by the powers that be, by the mainstream media, and by our own government. Iran has not had an aggressive act in over 300 years. I do not believe that Iran has that. They merely wish to protect themselves and be safe in their own homeland. But as I stated earlier, we have a problem in the U.S. in that President Trump was elected on one of his platform issues was no involvement in this endless war machine. We need to end it. And he's being thwarted every chance. He needs to clean house.
Uh-huh.
And we're going to find out, is Trump really in control of the executive branch? Or are these unelected bureaucrats in control of the executive branch?
We're going
to find out pretty quick if we're still a democratic republic or if we've been taken over and we're now some other form of government that we don't know about yet.
Thank you very much for that. Editor at Veterans Today, Mike Harris from Phoenix. And thank you, Chief Editor at TheTaxSystem.com, Keith Preston from Richmond. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Debate. From Ikobatawe, entire team in the capital, Tehran, is goodbye.